Nation. This evening's debate from the studios of WBAY-TV Green Bay is the first statewide broadcast debate to be held in Wisconsin's 2002 campaign for governor. It will engage the three Democratic Party candidates that have been certified for the ballot on September 10th. Wisconsin 5th District Congressman Thomas Barrett, Wisconsin Attorney General Jim Doyle, and Dane County Executive Kathleen Falk. The format for tonight's debate will allow for candidates to make opening statements, to respond to questions from a panel of reporters, and finally for each candidate to make a closing statement. The order of responses has been previously decided by drawing lots. Our panelists this evening include Jeff Mayers, President and Editor-in-Chief of the Internet-based political reporting service, WisPolitics.com, Cami Rapson, news anchor for WBAY-TV, and David Zweifel, editor of the Madison Capital Times. We will begin with 1 minute opening statements from each candidate. First of all, Mr. Barrett.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. I'm excited to be here tonight with the other candidates for governor. I've been blessed in my life. I've been blessed to grow up in a state that I love. I've been blessed to have a family that I love. I've had the honor to attend the University of Wisconsin, to attend the University of Wisconsin Law School. And I've had the tremendous honor to serve in the state legislature for 8 years, and for the past 10 years to represent Wisconsin in the United States Congress, fighting for what I believe in Washington, D.C. I grew up here, as I said, but this is not the Wisconsin that we all grew up in. We know there are problems in state government, serious problems that we have to address. I'm running for governor because I can restore integrity to this government. We have to do that. It's important for us. It's important for our children. That's why I'm looking for a fresh start for the state of Wisconsin.
Thank you.
Mr. Doyle, your opening statement.
Thank you, John. Thank you, members of the panel. From the time I joined the Peace Corps as a young man to my work as Attorney General, I have believed that public service done right can make a real change in people's lives for the better. And Lord knows we need a change in Madison today. Caucus scandals, skyrocketing taxes, blown budgets, 100,000 kids who don't have health insurance. We need a governor who will fight for people. We need a governor who will set the right priorities. And that's what I've done. Whether it's taking on the tobacco companies to bring a $6 billion settlement to the people of Wisconsin, fighting the drug companies to keep them from overcharging seniors, making sure Truth in Sentencing was in place to keep violent criminals off our streets, putting in place school safety plans to protect our kids, I'm the one candidate who has been there to fight the right fights. All three of us have our hearts in the right place, but as you make your decision, I ask you to decide which of us is the one that will fight for people and get things done. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Falk, your opening statement.
I don't doubt that Jim and Tom care a lot about education and health care and clean air and water and good paying jobs. But this year, in 2002, that's not enough. There's a $1 billion deficit going into the next year, and our next governor's got to come job ready. I've balanced 5 budgets in a row, and I have offered 8 major reform plans for how we get the state back in the black and how we get the state back on track so we can accomplish a vision here of investing our kids in every corner of the state so they've got clean air and water, good education, quality health care, and the opportunity to succeed. I've offered the skills and I offer the solutions to get us there.
Thank you. In the question and answer portion of our program, each candidate will have a minute and a half to respond to questions from our panelists. Jeff Mayers will now have the first question for Mr. Doyle.
Thanks for being here. If you're elected in November, probably job one is going to be digging the state out of what's estimated to be a 2-year hole of $2.8 billion. Where are you going to get that kind of money when all of you have spoken in favor of keeping two-thirds funding and against cuts in state shared revenue, aid to local government, and there's no tobacco money to tap into? Where are you going to find that kind of money, $2.8 billion?
Well, Jeff, let's start with some basics. There is a difference among the candidates in this campaign. I am the one who has said, I will not do this by raising taxes. We are not in the predicament we're in because the taxpayers of this state haven't done their fair share. We're the third highest taxing state in the country. There's no more room to go.
We have to do it the old-fashioned way, the way it should have been done a couple of years ago, by looking for the cuts that need to be made. We don't need a Department of Electronic Government. We don't. I have taken heat because I have suggested that we truly do need to have to shrink the size of state government. In my years as Attorney General, the workforce paid for by state taxpayers in the Department of Justice has actually decreased 15%. We can do this in the state of Wisconsin. We have to reduce the size of state government.
Ms. Falk?
Well, as you notice, Jim not only didn't answer the questions of what he'll do to accomplish these values despite a billion-dollar deficit, but he's actually made it worse. He recently announced his support for an $80 million tax cut for corporations. I'm not anti-corporation, but he just made the hole bigger. And it means less education, or it means more taxes for the rest of us. And that's why I come ready to do this job, because I've balanced a budget 5 years running in the state's second largest county in a way that has me a proven executive. I've vetoed tens of millions of dollars added by the county board, and I've earned my county a AAA bond rating, the highest measure you get for your fiscal skills. And that's why I've spent the whole last year putting together these 8 major reform packages, reforming the corrections budget to free up hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's the money we invest in education and health care. I've offered an economic package for growing our economy and increasing our per capita income so that we have more generated dollars here without any of our taxes going up. And that's why I've got the courage to support an increase in the cigarette tax. It's the right thing to do to help keep our kids from starting to smoke, to fund a health care program, and to repay that taken tobacco dollars. I come ready to do this. And this is the year again where it's not enough to care. I've spent a year developing the solution, so I come ready the day the job begins, and not just starting.
Mr. Barrett?
Well, clearly the next governor is going to inherit a serious problem, $2.8 billion deficit. It's a problem that cannot be solved with smoke and mirrors. It's a problem that cannot be solved with the tobacco settlement, because the tobacco settlement is gone. It's wrong, but it's gone. That means the next governor is going to have to make some serious decisions. As governor of this state, I will go agency by agency, department by department, to see where we can streamline government. We don't need a Department of Electronic Government. We don't need to contract out when it costs more money to contract. We don't need, after 16 years of one-party rule, layer upon layer of political bureaucracy. As a member of Congress, I returned $1.5 million to the U.S. Treasury. I did so because it's a responsible thing to do, and I know it's your money. Yet we've got a legislature and a governor's office in this state that don't operate on a budget. As governor of this state, I will put a budget in place for them. I will make sure that we have one-year budgeting so that we don't project 2 years into the future where we don't even know what's going to happen. But make no mistake about this. This is going to be difficult. It will be difficult to go agency by agency, but it's something we have to do. Our state constitution requires us to have a budget. By next year at this time, we will have a budget that's balanced in this state. As governor of the state, I guarantee we will do that. We will look for sources of revenues for places like the Indian Gaming Compacts, but we'll get the job done with a fresh start.
Thank you.
I'd like to have a follow-up, John. I mean, you can't do this just by cutting bureaucracy. Where are the big ticket items? How can you do it without raising taxes?
30 seconds on the follow-up.
Thank
yes.
You. My corrections reform alone is $143 million in just a few years. And I built this reform based on my experience in being responsible here for a jail in my county. And I put violent people in jail and violent people in prison. But we're now spending a lot of money, $30,000 a year, putting somebody with a drug or alcohol problem in prison. They get out, they have the same problem, they reoffend, they go back in. I've got a smarter plan, smarter on crime, smarter on tax dollars, smarter on human lives. It frees up money. That's the money I invest in education, in kids from the day they're born.
Mr. Doyle, 30 seconds on a follow-up.
You do it by reducing the size of the state workforce. You do it by much better management of the Medicaid budget. We spend $400 million a year in prescription drugs. Other states have gone out and found major savings. You've done it with outside contracts of this state. They have over $500 million a year. You do it by getting rid of the Department of Electronic Government. You do it by making the small changes throughout state government, like putting consumer protection in the Attorney General's office to save 20 positions that this governor did not support. These are the things that a governor is going to have to do to bring this in.
Mr. Barrett, 30 seconds.
Kathleen is right when we talk about corrections. I'm all for punishing criminals, but I don't think we should be punishing the taxpayers of the state. And this is an area where there has been tremendous growth in government. I will look there. I will look at every other agency that the state operates. Again, I want to stress to the people of Wisconsin, this is not going to be easy, but we will get the job done. That's the way we've always done it in the state of Wisconsin. We will look for additional revenue, again, as I said, from places like the Indian gaming compacts. I favor extending those, but I think in return for that, we can get more money for the state coffers.
Thank you. In our second round of questions, Ms. Falk will respond to a question first from Cammie Rabson.
Okay, let's talk more about state shared revenue, because Governor McCallum got really hauled on the carpet when he proposed this in January. This is the money that the state provides to the city and county governments. Already in 2004, the state is cutting $40 million from the approximate $1 billion given to this purpose. Will you keep those cuts to state shared revenue? Are you going to look to reinstate that money at any point? Would you consider deeper cuts, or would you phase it out altogether? Is that still an option for any of you? And if the money does start to leave the local governments, what options do you give those local leaders to make up the money and that property taxes do not rise, because nobody wants to pay more in property taxes?
Oh. Eager to answer your question, because I'm the only one of us candidates running here that works with shared revenues. For my county, for example, it's a $5.5 million pot that's really important so we can provide those bread and butter services, whether it's Meals on Wheels or deputy sheriffs on the street. It is a vital program in Wisconsin that has served us well for 90 years. I will not cut it. But you shouldn't let me off there. It's a billion-dollar program, and that's why I felt I have a responsibility to offer you what I would cut, like the corrections budget, and my revenue enhancers, like my economic plan. But I also think this is the future, and it was a really missed opportunity over the last year. We now had everybody at loggerheads because the governor insulted local governments. He said he was going to phase out shared revenues, and he cut it 100% for a lot of communities. We have a real trust and a real question of integrity now. And what I would do is I would be that leader, as I've done in my county, to create incentives for efficiencies and consolidations, because we need to do in government, as I've done as a county executive and as I will do as a governor, we need to force and create those efficiencies and consolidations so that every single day we're saving another tax dollar in order to improve services and control spending. Let me give you an example. This isn't esoteric to me. I do this every day for a living, and I've had to be able to earn this AAA bond rating for my county and control spending. I've done the kinds of innovations where we do joint services with towns to save us dollars on building a building so that both communities don't have to build buildings. It's the right thing to do.
Thank you very much. The next responder will be Mr. Barrett.
There's no question that it was a mistake for Governor McCallum to call for the elimination of the shared revenue program. This is a program that's been in existence for 90 years. It allows communities really to provide the basic services throughout the state of Wisconsin that we all rely on. Library services, police services, road services, fire services. And we will see property taxes increase if the shared revenue program is eliminated. I will compliment Governor McCallum, though. I think he was barking up the right tree when he talked about how we have to have more consolidation. I do believe we have to have more consolidation in local government, but I think the way to achieve that goal is through a carrot rather than a stick. And as governor of this state, I'm going to work with local officials, county officials, town officials, city officials, to see where we can have more efficiency in government, so that over the long run, we can recognize that we are going to have to reduce the spending in the state. The fact of the matter is the state of Wisconsin spends more money than it brings in. That means that this program cannot be sacrosanct. I do support the program, but like every other program, I think it's necessary for us to look at the program in light of what our priorities are for the future. And as governor of this state, I am a strong supporter of local government, because I know that property taxes are paid at the local level. That's what people think about when they think about who they're paying their property taxes to. They don't think about state government. They think about local government. But state and local governments are partners, and the state cannot abandon that 90-year partnership.
What are your response?
You know, I always wondered, where did McCallum and these guys come up with this idea to cut shared revenues completely? It's like they just didn't know how government gets funded and how we provide services. You know, when I talk to people and I ask them, what do you want from government? They'll tell me, I want good fire and police protection. I want to make sure the school in my neighborhood's a good school. I want to make sure the road in front of my house is in good repair and lets me get in and out. I want to make sure the park in the neighborhood is safe and good for my children to play in. That's all provided by some form of government other than the state government. And as governor, the obligation is to work closely with local government to make sure that those services are provided as effectively and efficiently as possible. This idea about cutting all of this just sort of came out of nowhere, and it obviously fell like a dead balloon. Let me say something. There is another major difference that's already emerged here in the area of criminal justice. You know, in Kathleen's plan, you would have to let out robbers and drug dealers from jail. It's that simple. Now, I've worked very hard to make sure the truth in sentencing is in the law in this state, and I believe people who have committed crimes and who judges have sent to prison should go to prison and spend the full time that they're there. We in prison, with all of this talk, we are in the bottom half of states in per capita imprisonment. We have seen the crime rates fall over the last 10 years. We have seen much safer communities in this state. Law enforcement in this state has done a good job, and it is important that we understand the role that corrections play in that.
Thank you. Yes.
So where do you stand? Would you cut shared revenue, or are you going to reinstate it, Mr. Doyle?
Mr. Doyle, 30 seconds.
I would not cut shared revenue. I certainly am ready. You know, this sort of myth that some years out there'll be a cut. I mean, what they're basically saying is we're going to let the next governor and legislature look at it. We clearly, as both Kathleen and Tom have said, should be looking for where the efficiencies are and where you can consolidate. But I'm not going to cut the shared revenue program.
Our third round of questioning will begin with Dave Zweifel. A question starting with Mr. Barrett.
What you all say sounds fine, but I still am very confused of how the heck we're going to save $2.8 billion the next biennium. And I wonder if there isn't a more basic issue here. Many claim that the state's budget woes are the results of an antiquated system, that we'll never be able to solve them unless we take the bull by the horns and completely redo it. And maybe this is the time we should. There's a concern that corporations pay too little and individuals pay too much. Poverty taxpayers seem to always be the place where the big burden comes to rest, whether it be for schools or mandates from the state. Others insist schools ought not to be on the private tax roll in the first place, that there are too many sales tax exemptions, and local governments need more flexibility to raise revenue themselves. Tell us what you think. Is the system broken, as some contend, or is the current structure of income, sales, and property taxes the best way we can still go by just tinkering with it as we go along?
Mr. Barrett.
I think it's simply good management to periodically look at both the spending that the state does and the revenues that the state collects. And I propose that the state, and I as governor, will look at all the state property tax exemptions and sales tax exemptions. I don't come to this with a certain focus on a specific one, but I think it's simply good public management to, on a periodic basis, review these exemptions. That means that the proponents will come forth and make the case as to why a certain exemption should remain on the books. It's something we haven't done essentially in a generation in the state of Wisconsin. Now, some have argued, well, this is just a way to raise taxes. I don't view it that way. I view it as a way to make sure that our tax system is fair, because we as a state have to ensure that our tax system is fair. This goes back to the issue I talked about in my opening statement, integrity. People have to believe that they're getting a fair shake from their government. And there is nothing wrong. There is nothing wrong to, on a periodic basis, look at our spending decisions, which we do every year as a budget, in the budget, and also look at our revenue decisions. And that's why, as governor of this state, I will take a look at that. I'm not going to go out and tax things like diapers or food products or farm equipment, but I want to make sure that the proponents of these tax exemptions make their case to the public. I see nothing wrong at all in the state of Wisconsin, where we used to have a tradition of open government, of having the proponents of these systems make the case to the people of this state. And as governor, I will do exactly that.
Mr. Doyle.
I agree with Tom in that we should always be looking, you know, we're never going to have like the taxing system perfect, and that should never be looked at again. Obviously, it should always be looked at, and times change, conditions change. I believe, for example, it's too bad Gary isn't here, but he has always been a proponent in these debates of saying that we should look at doing away with the uniformity clause in Wisconsin so that we can give homeowners, and particularly older homeowners, a specific tax relief that we currently can't give. This should be looked at, it should be considered, and probably put to the voters again as it was a number of years ago. So we should always be looking at the fairness of the tax system. We also, I think your question also really brings the question about the budget process. You know, what used to be an open government and an open process to sort of come to what the budget is has come down, as all of you who watch it closely know, of a process where there are some hearings in front of Joint Finance that really don't mean anything, because in the end the leader of the Assembly and the leader of the Senate go in and have a closed meeting, and this time with the governor. In this budget, the governor at the beginning proposed balancing the budget last January by taking all the tobacco money. Then they sat and argued and fought with each other for 5 months and then went back in a back room and said, okay, let's balance it by taking all the tobacco money. So we really need to clean up the budget process. And as governor, and I think all of us probably agree on this, I think we've all spoken about it, it is time that we get the governor stand up and say that the budget document is a fiscal document and that even we are going to veto those items that are not directly related to the budget and let the real legislative process take place again.
Ms. Falk.
Yes, Dave, the system is broke. Two-thirds of every dollar collected by the state goes back to local government. Local government's frustrated because they are underfunded in mandates on local governments. The state is frustrated, citizens are frustrated, and right now there's very little accountability to you as a taxpayer for where you to go when you are frustrated, either with the level of service or the level of spending. And in a democracy, that's the worst thing, for you not to be able to hold us accountable. I will fix that, and I've offered a plan for how to do that, which is to reform two of the big system each year in each biennium budget bill, and I come ready to do that. But meanwhile, short term, what do we do the day the next governor takes office? And that's why I've offered, again, out of my 8 reform packages, 3 offer immediate solutions. My corrections reform budget that Jim is poo-pooing and saying I'm going to let out robbers, he needs to read it. It's been out there since last fall. And I talk about nonviolent offenders with drug and alcohol problems. And I do at a state level what I've done in running a county and moving people out in a way that reduces their problems so they don't reoffend. It works, and it's real money. My economic plan for growing the economy produces $1 billion in income with none of our taxes going up. I'm the only candidate with an economic plan, and I do this every day for a living, in connecting people with jobs where they can move up the economic ladder by their own hard work and accord. And that's why my support for a health care package that not only has dollar amounts attached to it, but a way to fund it and get it done.
Thank you. Our next round of questioning will begin with Jeff Mayers. A question to start with for Ms. Falk.
Everybody wants to be a reform candidate this year. There's a scandal atmosphere in Wisconsin. The national media have picked up on it. We no longer have the clean government reputation we used to. Assure us tonight that there's no skeletons in your campaign or office's closets, and then tell us, as governor, when you're governor, what are you going to do to restore the reputation?
Well, I'm not a career politician. I was an environmental advocate fighter for 25 years professionally before I ran for public office at the age of 45 5 years ago. I ran for public office not because I like politics. I can't stand it. It's awful. I want to change it. That's what I hope I've done as county executive. That's what I want to do as governor. I'm sick of the meanness. Our citizens are sick of the meanness. They're sick of the gridlock. They're sick of the government not getting their business done. I love solving problems, and I get business done. And what first thing we need is a meaningful campaign finance reform bill. The one that was just passed isn't. If I'm governor, we will have a strong campaign finance reform bill. The second thing we need to do is we need to lead by example. Leaders need to lead by example. So, for example, when Governor McCallum proposed his cut in shared revenues to my county, the first thing I did was cut my salary. If I'm asking county employees to work harder, you start here. We have to lead by example. Our citizens, I know I'm 51 years old, and I remember Wisconsin my whole life that I was really proud to be in. I knew we paid a little more in taxes than other states, but we got great government for it, and we had great services. That's the government I want in Wisconsin, and that's my vision, and I bring these skills here to get that done.
Mr. Barrett.
There is no one on my staff currently or in the past, my government staff, who has been under investigation for the caucus scandal. I did have one worker on my campaign who was under investigation. He is no longer with my campaign. I've done that for 18 years. I've tried to very carefully separate the role of public official from politician, and I think I've done it rather successfully. There are issues here that I think are unanswered. I think the caucus scandal certainly raises the interest of people in the state of Wisconsin. And I have to say to the Attorney General, my friend, and I mean no ill respect with this, if I were the Attorney General of this state, I would excuse myself from the caucus investigation. It's something I think that your paper has asked for. And I would do that because I think that it is so important that we retain the integrity of this system. And Jim, if you're not willing to do that, I think simply explaining why that's not the case is important to the people of Wisconsin. I think with an election just 3 weeks away, we owe it to the people of the state to explain to them exactly what's going on. I'm also the only major candidate in this race to swear off the special interest money that's unlimited, the unlimited outside money. I think it's wrong. I think it pollutes democracy. And if you're going to have a governor who is strong enough to stand up to special interests, you better believe that person better be able to say to someone, no, I respect you, but I'm not going to accept $500,000 or $1 million. This is a serious issue. People talk about problems in government. We have to lead.
Mr. Doyle.
Well, Tom, there are a lot of people who would like to have the Attorney General's office get off of the caucus investigation, and I can assure you it's not going to happen. To shut down that investigation right now it would be pointless. The decisions in the case are going to be made by two district attorneys, a district attorney of Milwaukee County, a district attorney of Dane County, as you know well, and I'm sure they will make a good determination. My role has been to make sure that they have the investigators that are necessary to conduct a full and thorough investigation. With respect to the question of integrity in government, it isn't just a matter of having some plans about how you're going to put a few boards together. It is about who the real leaders of this state are. We have just seen another example today in the news of more underhanded, dirty, double dealing that really makes people sick of politics. We have watched, this is the kind of back room, back handshake kind of stuff that has brought the waste of the tobacco money, the caucus scandals, payment of legal fees unlawfully, all of that has happened. And it clearly, to me, where you start in making a change in integrity is changing leadership. Obviously, I think the governor of the state should go. But I also believe that leadership in the legislature should go as well. And Tom, I hope you'll agree that if there's a fresh start, Chuck Qualla should go.
Well, we should do a follow-up here. I mean, should Chuck Qualla go, the Senate Majority Leader, is he the problem?
Ms. Falk and Mr. Barrett, 30 seconds.
Sure, I can start out first. I think what went on was awful, sad, another example of why people have just had it with politics as usual. But the next governor does not handpick who citizens send to work with him or her. The next job of the governor is to work with those leaders in the legislature. And quite frankly, Jim, if you're a governor, how could you now work with leaders that the citizens have sent? You don't handpick the problems that are given to you as a governor. You work with who the citizens send. And I do that every day with a county board of people who I don't agree to with or do. Your job is to work with them, and that's what I do.
Mr. Barrett.
I share Kathleen's sentiments. I think that what Chuck did was a mistake in terms of not letting people know what he was doing when he did it. But I honestly don't know whether or not he should be removed from office. There's only one person in this room who has access to that information, and that's Jim Doyle. He's the only one who has called for his removal. That's why, again, I say, how can we have an investigation going on during the midst of a political season if there's one candidate who might have more information? I think we have to be on a level playing field. I don't think we can afford the appearance of impropriety.
Jeff, if I could respond to that. I have called for Chuck Qualla to step aside because he and Scott Jensen have brought us a budget that wasted every dime, $6 billion of the tobacco settlement, that they have opened up the checkbook to pay for unlimited lawyers' fees after I have told them it is unlawful for them to do it, and then denied your right, the media, to even look at the records to see where those payments were being made. And now we see further examples of this kind of dealing. That's why I have called for his removal, Tom, not for any other reason. And Kathleen, nobody's asking him to be removed from office. As Democratic leaders, we should have the guts to stand up and say that this guy should step down as the leader of the Senate.
Thank you. The next round of questioning will be started by Cami Rapson with a question first for Mr. Barrett.
Let's talk about campaign finance reform. The governor's race is estimated to be a $20 million race in Wisconsin this year. And each of you have raised more than $1 million, well more in some cases, to finance your particular run. And that includes money from several large donations from individuals and political action committees that represent various interest groups. How do you guarantee that if you are elected as governor, that your decisions will be for the people of Wisconsin, not for your donors, not for the political action committees? What single campaign finance reform piece would go the furthest to improve the system overall, do you think?
Let me start by talking about the single piece of campaign finance reform that would go furthest in reforming the system. Most people who are watching this tonight, if they talk about making contributions, think of $10 or $15 or $20. The limit's actually $10,000 for an individual, $43,000 for a PAC. That's what people expect, and that's what they understand. But there's this whole new world out there of unregulated, limitless money that can undermine our democracy. It's called the independent expenditures. These are groups that claim that they're independent. Yet they come in and they'll run ads, maybe $500,000 in ads, $1 million in ads, and we have no way of knowing how that money is basically going to be spent. I would very much like to be the governor of the state of Wisconsin, but I'm not willing to hand the keys of this office over to anybody. And if someone is spending $500,000 or $1 million on your behalf, how easy is it going to be to say no? If we want to deal with the serious budget problems that we have as a state, we have to have leaders who are strong enough to say no. I'm strong enough to say no to my friends, to my enemies, during the primary, during the general election. I'm ripping a page out of Russ Feingold's book. He said no to independent expenditures in 1998 because he felt it would clean up the system. If we're serious about cleaning up this system of government in the state of Wisconsin, we have to say no to this unlimited outside money. I'm the only candidate who said it, and I realize that it actually affects my ability to win this race. But I believe in it, and that's why I've said it.
Mr. Doyle.
We clearly need campaign finance reform. Again, when you talk about lack of leadership and backroom deals, what the governor and Quala and Jensen have just given us is a sham campaign finance reform, pretending that it is the real thing. They did it without talking to Mike Ellis, who's been the real leader in this state. I truly believe we know what the basic premise of a real campaign finance bill is: limit on individual contributions, limit on spending, and a public fund that is large enough to make people comply with the law. I think Mike Ellis, there's some things that need to be tweaked in it, but I think Mike Ellis, Republican senator, has laid out a very good blueprint that, to me, if I'm governor, we're going to make sure that it goes through. Let me also say, maybe in defense of Kathleen here, Tom, the law is that Kathleen has no authority to tell anybody making an independent expenditure whether they should do it or not. And that is their choice, and it is their constitutional right. And in fairness, Tom, you did not call for this until SEIU endorsed Kathleen and WEAC endorsed me. And that was the time that you first called for the abolition or to discourage independent expenditures in this race.
Ms. Falk.
Well, if there's anybody that believes in campaign finance reform, it's me. Again, I'm not the career politician here. I was a regular citizen for 45 years, and when I ran for office and saw the kind of money you had to raise, it's daunting, and it keeps real, normal human beings from running. And what can be worse in a democracy than real, normal human beings not stepping up to the plate to take their turn to lead? Well, when I started running for governor, I had to start from almost scratch. My good colleagues here were able to take money that they had raised earlier, and for, in Tom's example, for different races, running for Congress, and just put it into this race. Well, I've raised over $1 million, as you kindly said, and I don't have any rich friends. Just real people digging in and handing out some money to help create a different vision here. I support the strongest campaign finance bill that exists. It's SB 104. It's Senator Ellis's bill. It's the strongest one out there. I support it. I'd love to sign that. I'd love that to be the first bill I sign. It's got meaningful reform, and we need it to take the money out so normal human beings will run to office.
Dave Zwiefel will start our next round of questioning, starting with Mr. Doyle.
Well, let's go to a easy question, education. As we all know, it takes a huge buyout of our state budget and also a lot of homeowners' individual budgets when they get their property tax bill. Yet we have incredible unmet needs in our public schools. Teachers feel hamstrung by the so-called QEO. Districts are shackled by so-called levy limits, and at the same time, pressure keeps building to take public money and use it for private school vouchers. With all these issues lurking outside the door, what will you do to improve public education in Wisconsin beyond keeping two-thirds state funding and getting rid of revenue caps and a QEO, and then at the same time not increasing state budgets?
Mr. Doyle.
Well, David, in my first years out of college, I was a teacher in the Peace Corps. My wife is a teacher. My mother was a teacher. I have the support in this race of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Libby Burmaster. I have the support of WEAC, which represents 90,000 state teachers. I am the public education candidate in this race. And if I am elected, we're going to do a number of very important things. The first place, We need to make sure the teacher salaries are increased. The QEO has got to go. When our salaries now are below the national average, could you imagine Wisconsin, a state that has prided itself in education, sees its average teacher salaries fall below the national average? And we need, the QEO is what has done that. It has been punitive, and it is time for it to go. The revenue caps as well have taken away from local school boards the right to make a decision on what they should spend. It is anti-democratic. If people don't like what the school board is doing, they can vote them out of office. The formula itself needs a badly needs repair. I've even heard Scott McCallum, the one time he appeared with us at a forum, actually declared that he didn't think this formula worked anymore. And we really need to go to a formula that is based on how much money does it take to give a child in this state a sound basic education, which is that child's constitutional right. We've got to get back to basics, not formulas that punish every single district in the state except rich, growing suburban districts, and formulas that are exceptions piled on exceptions. We've got to get back to basics. How much does it cost to educate a kid in this state, and are we committed to putting that, which I am, behind every single student?
Ms. Falk.
Jim, you don't declare yourself the education governor. You do it by showing how you're going to fund education. There's a $1 billion deficit, Jim. You haven't offered $1 billion in cuts, and in fact, you'd say you'd cut taxes even more and make another $80 million hole in this. How are you going to fund education without raising taxes and not offering $1 billion in cuts? Not possible. That's why I owe you, we all owe you, an answer to that question, and that's why I've spent a year putting together these reform packages, talking about the corrections budget, and we're all free money out of there to invest in education, strong K through 12, strong university and technical college systems, but also Start Smart programs the day kids are born so they have an opportunity to see succeed. Now, the good news in our state was in the headlines today. We're again the top in the country in our ACT scores, and that's fantastic. We're doing a lot of things right, but for a lot of kids, they're not succeeding. 50% of the kids in a great Milwaukee public school system who start high school don't graduate. That's a tragedy. My reform packages are intended to invest in those kids the day they're born so they do graduate. Now, I'm against the QEO, too. It's not fair. There's no other set of employees we hold to that awful standard like we do teachers with their arm tied behind their back at bargaining. It's not fair. It's got to go. But you shouldn't let us off the hook there. I've offered the plans for how you fund education, because in this year, it's not enough to care.
Mr. Barrett.
Well, I have 4 children under the age of 9, so education's not a political issue. It's a personal issue for me. I want the 4 Barrett kids to get the best education in the world. But I don't want it for just the 4 Barrett kids. I want it for every single child in this state. And we owe it to every single child in the state, because we now live in a world economy. We are competing not so often with people from Illinois or Minnesota. We're competing with people from Mexico or China, and we have to educate our children. There's no question this is the hardest issue that we face as a state. We have to fund the system. This is my number one commitment, because I believe that we have to invest in the future of this state. I want to take money and make sure that it goes into the classrooms. If we have to cut back anywhere, let's cut back on the 2/3 commitment for building in the wealthiest communities in this state. If we can't afford it, that's where we should look. But I want to make sure that the kids in this state can read. I want to make sure that we eliminate the QEL so that teachers are not the only public officials that are singled out with a salary cap. And equally important, so that young people in college will look at education as a career that they want to choose. My wife's a teacher. My mother's a teacher. I believe in education. I believe in public education. We have a duty as a state to make sure that we provide education in this state. As Kathleen pointed out, we've got the kids in the state with the highest ACT and SAT scores in the nation. We should be proud of that. We should be promoting that. Because if you're a parent anywhere in this country and you want your child to get a great education, come here for our schools, our universities, and our great technical school system.
John, can I just one quick follow-up? How are we going to do this, though, all three of you, without placing more burden on our property taxpayers?
30 seconds. Ms. Falk.
Again, I've offered the reforms of the state budget to free up money in the state budget with my cigarette tax increase, my corrections reform, and my economic plan. No more goes on property taxes. That hits people hardest, and that's why I've moved the system around in the state budget so it's state dollars here that are funding education.
Mr. Doyle?
I think reform of the formula, even if you don't put them, if you keep the dollar level commitment right now, goes a long way. Right now, we are punishing any district that has a student body that's staying relatively the same or decreasing. And the other thing that is really putting a huge burden on our local property taxes is that the state has to really help out at its special education costs. The federal government has really left us holding the bag. They promised 40% funding of special education. It's 16%. But right now it is putting an enormous burden on our local taxpayers, and it's something that the state could really help local school districts with.
Mr. Barrett.
Dave, I assume your question may have been going to the teachers issue, the salary of teachers, and so let me answer that directly. When that law was created back in 1993, the plan was to have it for a year or two. Obviously, we're now in the 10th year. I think that we can't simply eliminate it. I think we have to have something that takes its place. And what I propose is a creation of a mediation arbitration system like we have for other public employees. Again, I don't think that teachers, educators should be singled out. I think we can go to a mediation arbitration system. And if people are unhappy with the factors, we can look at those factors. That's where the debate should be. Of course, we don't want property taxes to rise, but let's try to treat these employees like other public employees.
Our next round of questioning will begin with Jeff Mayers. A question for Mr. Barrett to begin.
So health care costs are on the rise again, and many small businesses can't afford health care for their employees anymore. A state program to help small businesses through pooling has never seemed to have gotten off the ground. Meanwhile, many state employees get their health care included in their benefit package. Is that a luxury these days? Should that be trimmed, or can the state afford to provide free health care for its state employees?
Well, let me start off by talking about the issue in general, the issue of health care, because this is the number one issue that you hear throughout the state of Wisconsin. Virtually every place I go in the state of Wisconsin, whether I'm talking to senior citizens, union members, business owners, people without insurance, health care costs are the number one issue. It's an issue I've worked on as a member of Congress, as I've fought to get additional funding for the state of Wisconsin for Medicare, something that we haven't finished with. We have more to go, but we continue to fight. I fought for additional money for hospitals to treat a high percentage of people without insurance. You made reference to the fact that our small pool hasn't worked. The reason it hasn't worked is Governor McCallum basically vetoed it out of the budget last year. I am a strong proponent for creating purchasing pools for small businesses. I'm an even stronger proponent for creating purchasing pools for prescription drugs, because this is the number one runaway cost that we see throughout the healthcare system in the state. I propose that we expand senior care so more seniors can benefit from this program without any cost to the state, because we would simply build off the purchasing power that the state now exercises when it purchases prescription drugs. But I've also called for something in the long run, and that's a creation of, for the first time in this state, a public-private partnership where state government, working with school districts, businesses, local government, would get together and pool our assets together so that we can drive down the cost of health care. We need more purchasing clout so that we can level out this playing field. And as governor of this state, I recognize what a serious problem this is, and I will be very proactive so people can get their health care.
Mr. Doyle.
Congress has failed miserably in enacting a national health care policy in this country. It is badly needed. I think there is fervor for this. It's clearly all over the state of Wisconsin, all over the country. And yet Congress goes back there time after time, and nothing happens to give citizens of this country any help. I have fought those battles, took on the tobacco companies. If this legislature and governor hadn't wasted $6 billion, we would have had $175 million a year, every year forever, to help with health care costs in the state of Wisconsin. I have sued the drug companies that seem to have their way in Congress these days for a variety of different overcharging schemes that they have had. But in Wisconsin, we do need to try to improve health care for everyone. It makes no sense to me to go to people who have good health coverage and say, we want to knock you down. Somehow that's going to make us all feel a lot better. That makes no sense to me. What we should really be focusing on is how do we help everybody lift up. Tom's right. The governor vetoed a very small amount of the money that would have helped small businesses form those kinds of pools. I think those small businesses have to join together with the state, in fact, to use the bargaining power of the state in going out into the health into the healthcare market. We do, as a state, purchase $400 million a year of prescription drugs. It's a tremendous amount of bargaining power that we can put to use for seniors and others all over the state. But what we're doing here in the state, let's recognize it, we're doing stopgap things, important things, until the moment when the federal government finally steps in and takes care of the health care problem in this country.
Ms. Falk?
Jeff, I notice by your frown that neither of the gentlemen have answered your question, but let me. and I know how to answer this because I do this every day again. I negotiate and bargain with 8 great hardworking unions that represent 2,000 county employees. And I have just finished my 3rd round of 2-year contracts. And I bargain fairly at the table. I earn their support, but I'm a tough bargainer. And so, for example, this year, their health care coverage will continue to be the health care coverage they have bargained in the past with me, but it means they got a little less in a salary increase. That's the trade-off, and that's the respect that the next governor needs to do in working with 70,000 full-time state employees at the bargaining table. So you treat your employees with respect, and you get your hands around growing costs either at the salary end or at the health care end. But I don't let it stop there. The next governor's got to do something innovative here. It's not enough to bemoan the fact there's not a national solution. I've got a comprehensive health care package. It's more comprehensive than either Jim or Tom's. More importantly, it has a price tag for every item in it. And even more importantly, it has a way to fund it, which is my support for an increase in the cigarette tax. And one of the innovations in this health care package is a pilot program to get control and a handhold on rising health care costs exactly for state employees so they don't have to spend all their hard bargaining power on rising health care costs when we can do something about it.
Thank you. Our next round of questioning will begin with Cammie Rabson with a question first for Mr. Doyle.
I'd like to talk about chronic wasting disease. It's a big deal in the state's deer herd. It's causing a lot of concern, especially with the upcoming hunting season. A report from a UW-Madison researcher said that the state could lose up to 20% of hunters because of concerns about CWD, and that snowballs into tens of millions of dollars in tourism, especially for this northern Wisconsin area. How do you think Governor McCallum has handled the situation so far, and how will you attack CWD specifically? Where does the money come from to test, to dispose of, and ultimately eradicate this disease in Wisconsin?
I think the governor got off to a stumbling start on this one, and it's gotten worse. I have been calling for a plan in this state, a public-private partnership, in which the state helps private labs do the testing for hunters. The state policy is in no way directed at hunters. They are doing the testing, trying to determine the spread of the disease, the DNR is, and that's fine to do that. But that doesn't help the individual hunters who are making a decision on whether or not they're going to go deer hunting this fall. And I have called on the governor repeatedly to work with private testers to permit a private testing system by which a deer hunter can have a test done quickly and can determine whether the venison is edible or not. If we don't give hunters that assurance, we really do run the risk of having a deer hunt that is much more than the 20% reduced. There have been other estimates of 30% or more. That is very bad for the economy of the state. There's a public safety issue. Believe me, I drive 50,000 miles a year on the state roads, and I'd rather have the hunters out there having a full deer hunt than for me to be taken off the deers as I'm driving the deer as I drive these roads. And there is an important a problem with farmers' crops if we don't have a full hunt. This governor has to get off the mark and get working in a way that will give hunters some confidence that the deer that they shoot can be tested at their expense. And there are groups that can say that they can do it at $30-$35 for a hunter so that the hunter has confidence that the venison is edible. Clearly, we need to continue testing broadly to see where it goes. But right now, time is ticking. The deer hunt is upon us, and it is important that we set up a system of private testing to give the hunters confidence.
Ms. Falk.
I agree with Jim that Governor McCallum has gotten us off on the wrong foot here. Just last week, President Bush vetoed really important federal dollars that Wisconsin could have been eligible for so we can get the dollars to buy the testing equipment here in Wisconsin. But here's what I would do, and I have 3 different hats here. I'm a hunter myself. I've got to decide this fall whether I'm going deer hunting and whether I'll eat the deer if I'm lucky enough to shoot one, and I haven't yet. The second thing, I've got to decide as a county executive who operates the landfill that the DNR would like to use to put the dead carcasses, as well as I'm the county executive in one of the 3 counties that's ground zero for the eradication program. We're where? My county, where we found the CWD. So I am belaboring by reading the scientific research, by listening to the DNR experts and my public health experts, so I can make the best scientific decision on what's appropriate for my county to take in the carcasses in the landfill, or whether I advise our citizens on what they should do to protect themselves. But I have a third hat here as a gubernatorial candidate, and what I will do as governor, and here's what I think needs to happen. We need this, and I called for this way last spring. We need to do the statewide testing to see if CWD is elsewhere in the state. We need to buy a high rate incinerator. The digesters that the federal government has given us some money to buy won't cut the mustard. You can only destroy the prions with the highest level of incineration. We need that $1 million device here. We need it now. We need the federal government's help to pay for that. And we need to make sure our private labs, like the great labs in Marshfield Clinic, are going to be able to do the work they've offered to do despite the federal government, so they can do testing in the northern part of the state as us hunters get our deer and can have some assurance of whether that deer we got is diseased or not.
Thank you. Mr. Barrett?
Hunting is a crucial part of the culture, the history, and the economy of the state of Wisconsin. And most importantly, right now, the economy of the state of Wisconsin is threatened by chronic wasting disease. As a member of Congress, I worked with other members of Congress from the state of Wisconsin on a bipartisan basis to do whatever we could to get resources back to the state of Wisconsin, because I believe that the federal government has to be a partner in this fight against chronic wasting disease. That's why I, too, was disappointed when the Bush administration basically said it wasn't going to use the $17 million that people like Senator Cole and Congressman Obey set aside to use to fight chronic wasting disease in the state of Wisconsin. Instead, less than 24 hours after that announcement was made, he was in Milwaukee to have a fundraiser for Governor McCallum. Frankly, I'd like to see him use the money they raised at that fundraiser to pay for chronic wasting disease, to fight chronic wasting disease in the state of Wisconsin. But we have to make sure that we do the testing. We have to make sure that we contain this disease. And that is something that I will continue to work with other members of the delegation, the congressional delegation. I'll work with state officials. I actually don't think that this is the time for finger pointing. I think that this problem is too serious right now to make it a partisan issue. I'd rather solve the problem right now, contain the disease and the disease. Then the politicians can start the finger pointing. But let's be fair to the hunters in this state, and let's solve this problem so that we can have a healthy hunting season in the state of Wisconsin this year and every year in the future.
Thank you. That concludes the question and answer portion of our debate. We will now have 1 minute closing statements from each candidate. Ms. Falk?
I'm the mom of a great and wonderful 21-year-old man. I'm a conservationist who hunts and fishes. I'm a lifelong environmental fighter who spent her career, since she was 8 actually, working to protect our environment. And I'm a proven executive who's balanced a budget 5 years running and earned her county a AAA bond rating. I love solving problems. I love balancing budgets. And so what I offer here at this important year for our state is I offer a set of skills and a set of solutions, 8 reform plans for how to get our state back in track, and how to accomplish this vision, a vision of investing in our kids in every corner of the state so they've got a great education, clean air and water, great health care, and the chance for a decent paying job. I love Wisconsin. I love the people and the places in every part of the state. I come ready to be a leader to get our state back on track. I will work as hard as I can here, not just to earn your trust, but more importantly, to keep it. And I would love the chance to work for you. I ask for your support. Thank you.
Mr. Barrett, your closing statement.
In my opening statement, I talked about the ethical challenges that we have as a state, the fact that we don't live now in the state we grew up in. But I don't want anybody tonight to think that somehow I'm not bullish about the state of Wisconsin. I could not be more optimistic about the future of this state. This is the state that my wife and I have chosen to raise our 4 children in. This is the state that my mother lives in, my brothers and sisters. We live here because we love it. If there's anything I've learned in this campaign, is that people love the state of Wisconsin because it's a great place to live and it's a great place to raise a family. We can make it an even better state, though, if we tackle the serious fiscal problems that we face, if we restore fiscal integrity to state government, if we bring more people into this democracy so that they believe that this democracy really responds to them and not to the special interests, then we'll start moving this state forward. That's what this is all about, is moving this state forward. We've had 16 years of one-party domination of the governor's office. It's time for a fresh start. Please give me a chance, and we'll move this state forward. Thank you very much.
Mr. Doyle, your closing statement.
John, thank you, and Kathleen and Tom, thank you as well. Wisconsin is a wonderful, wonderful state, and there are things that really join us together. Here we are in Green Bay tonight, and we're hotly anticipating whether Brett Favre is going to throw 4 touchdown passes in the first regular season game. It's things that make us join together as people of this state. But there are much more important things as well that make us join together. Commitment to education. When you talk about what the brand of the state of Wisconsin should be, it should be education. The best public school system, the best university system, the best technical college system that can be offered to anybody in the world. And we also know that Wisconsin stands for quality, hard-working people. I have seen it over so many years traveling this state, seeing the farmers going into the fields, people going into the factories and offices. One thing about Wisconsin is you get an honest day's work for an honest day's pay. Right now we have political leadership that is holding back the great potential of the state of Wisconsin. My commitment to public service, to help people, is there to free this state up, to give us political leadership we can be proud of, to get Wisconsin moving forward again. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That concludes the debate between Democratic gubernatorial candidates Kathleen Falk, Jim Doyle, and Thomas Barrett. We thank those candidates, Jim Doyle, Tom Barrett, Kathleen Falk, for their participation. And we thank our panelists, Jeff Mayers, WisPolitics.com, Cammie Rapson, WBAY-TV, and David Zweifel, the Madison Capital Times. WisPolitics.com, the Madison Capital Times, and the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Foundation, and over 40 Wisconsin radio and television stations have sponsored and broadcast this debate to ensure that every citizen of Wisconsin has had an opportunity to hear and see the candidates for governor in this closely contested Democratic primary. In the spirit of service to our Wisconsin community, we hope that bringing this political event to you as a public service will contribute positively to the campaign and aid Wisconsin voters in their preparation to vote in the primary election on September 10th. After the primary election, we encourage you also to tune in for the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Foundation traditional debate between the major party candidates for governor in the 2002 general election in late September or early October. Please consult the programming guides in your local area for the exact time and date. And now, on behalf of WisPolitics.com, the Madison Capital Times, and Wisconsin's radio and television broadcasters, and Democratic gubernatorial candidates Tom Barrett, Jim Doyle, and Kathleen Falk, thank you for listening. Good night.